Hi, I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
Welcome to My Opening Line, where we talk to artists about their first times performing. What got them into it? What got them into stand-up?
What got them to stay after the most embarrassing first time? Usually the first time is terrible, you feel weird, and then why? What would make you continue?
It could be an actor, could be a singer. I want to get to the bottom of it, and we're going to today with Chemda.
Embarrassing.
Chemda has, without exaggeration, the greatest singing voice I've ever heard in my life. And I mean that. But how did she start? What was the process? There's got to be stories of people taking advantage, I would assume. But we'll see. I'm looking right now, Chemda, by the way. I collect these. Everything you've ever done. Listen to this, folks.
Remember CDs? I don't think you're zhuzhing around digital content.
That's physical. Do you miss that? Do you miss the fact that there's not... If you did something now, you can't like put it on a shelf. Do you miss that?
My ego misses it.
Right.
Like there, you're holding two tapes.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right.
Like I did that, so you can't do manipulative shit. Like what's this? Oh, a thing that I did.
Right. All right. Let's get to where you started. Now, as a kid, I imagine your parents realize you can sing.
Yeah.
Did they make you sing for family?
They do. The weird thing is my family is Middle Eastern, and they think singers are whores. Like, entertainment is a thing that you do when your family's broken, when you're not modest, when, you shake your ass for other people. You know,
right.
It's always associated with that, as an undertone. I didn't really know, but it was like, every time, let's say my dad would talk to a singer who we really liked, from a band of like a wedding band or anything, he'd be like, wow, you have the greatest voice, blah, blah, blah. She would turn around and be like, don't you ever take that road. Like,
right.
Just
as soon as she's not looking, she says to you.
Yeah.
He says that to you.
Yeah.
Do you?
But I did. I sang for my family. I learned a Persian song because my family's from Iran. Half of them are from Iran. And I don't know what I'm saying, but my grandma used to call from Iran before we can just call people.
Right.
So we'd have a time and date, and my uncles would come over, whoever was in the country in America would come over to huddle around this speaker. And I didn't speak any Persian. So they would be like, okay, now talk to your grandma. I'm like, she doesn't speak Hebrew or English, which I do. And I don't speak Persian. So they'd be like, well, you know that Persian song. I'm like, okay, that sounds weird, but I just do what I'm told. I start singing, and she's on a phone call, and she just maybe after a few notes or whatever, she just starts talking, and then they zhuzh me out of the way, and I did what I needed to do, whatever.
Now, they weren't worried that grandma was going to get horned up. It's okay to sing for family, right?
Yeah, because you're being modest. You're singing, songs from our tradition or from,
right.
It's not like, baby, you can do this and blah, blah, blah. Although, honestly, it probably is in Persian. I just don't know the words. Like, what could I be singing about? It's a love song.
Did you like the attention, or did it become a party trick you got sick of?
I always, always, always love singing, and am probably usually embarrassed to do it anyway. Like, I love singing, but when people ask me to do it, I say no, because I don't believe that anyone wants to hear, and I need you to 120% want me to sing before I feel like my voice will not. You ever get people, it's like they're singers, so they'll sing at you, they'll play their guitar without you asking, they'll look you in the eye and sing you their lyrics, and you're supposed to be like, they're one person audience or three person audience, it becomes awkward. So I couldn't differentiate between people who really want to hear or people who are just like, oh, you sing.
Right.
And I can't handle that.
I've been to karaoke, and you see these people that take it too serious.
Mm-hmm.
And they mean it. And if you sing, you go to join them, they're mm-hmm. offended, like Quincy Jones is going to walk in.
Absolutely.
You're ruining their moment. Do you get afraid you're going to come off like that? Because if you sing...
Karaoke gives me so much anxiety. So much anxiety.
Because you don't want to show off, but...
I almost sing a little bad or just because I don't want to be like,
right.
And I don't want to pick the slow song that everyone's like, this is a party and I know
right.
you sound great doing this, but no one wants to hear I Will Always Love You,
Right.
But The thing is that some people do, you know what I mean? But I can't get over it.
They do, by the way. They do want to hear it.
I can't do it, you know? And then I'll do it and I'll be embarrassed while I'm doing it. I'll be embarrassed after. I want to leave. I want the song to be over while it's going because I'm like, what am I doing?
We'll always love you. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're apologizing in between every long good note.
To me, it's like you're not having fun. You're being a singer, you know, right. And that's not the essence of karaoke. The essence of karaoke is we're being silly and whatever. So I try to pick an upbeat song that I can just, you know, kind of mess around with. Mm-hmm. But every time I'm just like, why do I go to karaoke? It's so nerve wracking.
How did you know that you could sing? Because your parents are saying you can do this for grandma.
I don't know, but I did go to a Jewish school for 9 years, like kindergarten through eighth grade, and we prayed.
A lot of songs, right?
We prayed every morning for a half an hour, and that's all songs.
Right.
So, you know, you kind of like recognize that you're on key, and people kind of throw you a little bit more in. So I started leading prayers a little bit more, and I'm like, yay, it's just an opportunity for me to sing. I don't care if I'm singing about God or Jesus or, you know, Muhammad or whatever.
Right.
I had fun singing. So I
probably not Jesus though, right?
Probably not. Probably not. And you know what's weird is I didn't know Jesus was a Jew until my last year in Jew school. And they always separate us. You know, Jews are like this. Everyone else is like that. Jews are like this. Everyone else is like that. Everyone's always after us to kill us, all this stuff.
Right.
And when I found out that Jesus was a Jew in eighth grade, right before I was about to go to like, you know, regular people school, public school, mm-hmm. I was like, you motherfuckers. The whole time he was a Jew. Mm-hmm. You couldn't start with that. Like, that ties in a lot of stuff.
Sure.
9 years you were teaching me about Judaism, and you couldn't teach me that the Last Supper was Passover. I know, I'm going off on a tangent, but I learned, so one of my first times on stage was really just in a cantor sort of way, in like leading the school in prayer. Okay. And so I learned how to read the Bible and how to sing the Bible, which I don't know, I didn't know this until, you know, I went to Jew school. The Bible is not just, you ever hear the cantor? Mm-hmm. Like, those notes are permanent. Every word in the Bible has a note that,
oh, it's
like,
not the, they're not deciding to sing it that way. That's the song.
That is the song. So the entire Bible is a song with a melody.
Really?
Yeah. And it only has, like, there are notes that you put above or below the word, and that's how you, so one note is, you know, okay. And so you'll put that on the letter, and there are only like 10 of those, so that's why you're hearing all the things sound the same.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to sight read that, and I learned how to, like, if you just gave me the biblical words and had the notes on there, I could just read it and sing it at the same time. Don't know how I did that.
Do some Bibles remix?
You know, I'm sure they do.
Warren can't let their songs alone. You would think the Bible would change.
Right. And so, yeah, I started, like, nobody else wanted to do it. So I would do, you know, all three. You have to do three different ones every Monday and Thursday, you know, stuff like that.
Did you love doing it in school?
Again, it always came with a little bit of shame. It always came with, I'm not being modest. I'm just showing off. No one wants to hear this. But it came with this joy of, like, I really... There's a thing of, you know, when people dance, like, you feel free when you dance. When I sing, I feel so good, but that's why I keep it to the shower, you know? So it's like, only I will disturb me with my vocals.
Who's the Jewish guy, Zim? He did music with kids.
Paul Zim.
And he's prolific. I don't know how popular he was.
It was very popular because when I was younger, there wasn't a lot of, like, modern day music, even though it was like old timey stuff, like classic, you know, Jew songs, he brought it with like new instruments and rejuged, and it wasn't like so different, but it was a little bit more modern. He had a choir that I joined because my next door neighbor was in it. When I moved in when I was 10, I joined, and she was an incredible singer. And then he would record these little kids. We were all little kids. In his album, and so you'd hear like one little Shamith burning brightly, lighting other candles nightly. It was adorable. He didn't pay anyone. He didn't give us anything.
Like, I bet he still has those records if you want one.
Yeah, I mean, when you Google, I think, you know, and last time I did, when you Google something like Hanukkah songs and, like, you know, I think a lot of Paul Zim stuff comes up. So he made lots of money on these little kids, but. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was the only one who put money in, but he produced it, so.
Let's see, 8 days of Hanukkah.
Yeah, so I did, with my next door neighbor, he gave us the duo for the first stanza.
Right.
And so here's the thing.
Where did he record this, a real studio or his basement?
No, a real studio. Okay. He paid real money, it was real instruments. It is a good album if you're a Jew.
He paid real money to the studio, not to the kids.
No, not to the kids.
Right, little exploiting?
Yeah, a lot of exploiting, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Led by Judah and his faithful brothers, we drove the tyrant from our holy land.
So I can't hear it now, but back when I recorded it, my next door neighbor was the opposite of me. She was not shy about it. She'll sing when you ask, when you don't ask. And this is kind of what turned me off. I didn't want to sound like that. So she sang very pretty no matter what. So it's like rock and roll, it's pretty. Like opera, right. It's pretty. It's like, it doesn't fit. So I took myself down a notch. And so you'll hear her go vibrato and I'm like, I'm not doing that. You know, like, so she'll be like, holy, oh, wait, whoever is for God, come join our band. You know, and I'm like, no, that's not.
Mm-mm. That's my dad in church.
Yeah.
Everybody goes, amen. And you hear him, man.
Yeah. The thing is she was right, you know, but she was also overbearing and wanted to make sure that, you know, she was more. But you hear back and all you hear is kids. But for me, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I did the right thing being modest or like, you know, maybe I should sing out when I sing.
Do you know if any of the parents ever said, hey, Paul Zim, we can use a couple, what do you guys call money?
Shekels.
Shekels.
I doubt it because it was just a dumb thing that the kids are doing,
okay.
You know, and they weren't like our agent, nobody, and my parents didn't want me to sing professionally. It was okay for me to do this because it was part of like the Jewish community. So it wasn't me being a whore.
He never asked you to stay the night to get the vocals just right. No. Nothing like that.
No, he wasn't. It was all on the up and up.
Okay,
like that. It's actually very lovely. It was just a cute thing that we did.
Do you, in school, know that, hey, I think I want this to be my career, singing?
Never. No, not until I was going to college and I answered an ad for Kids Party Entertainment. And I was like, oh, wow, I can get paid to like go and entertain kids and whatever. And
did you know what you would do? Are you doing balloons, seltzer tricks in people's faces?
I saw, because my best friend had way younger kids. And so once they threw a party and I saw entertainment, and so I noticed like they bring costumes and they face paint. So I figured I'd be trained to do something like that and I could do that. And when I got that job, it was such an odd job that I loved so much that it woke me up to a different track of life. Like if I could do this weirdo thing and it could be respected enough, you know, like I have a job and it's kind of artsy, then maybe I can be a singer.
Okay.
You know, because I thought, you know, singers are like rock and roll, like they're badasses. And I grew up in a very, you know, controlled environment. And I didn't consider myself like, you know, outside like that, like a singer would be.
Right.
You know?
And then do you think, okay, I'm willing to be a singer now. I guess I have to go on auditions.
Yeah. So
did you go to one of these art schools, a fame school, this kind of thing?
I went to Cardoza. They had a dance program, so I got in for dance, which doesn't mean I can like super duper dance, but it does mean I have rhythm and I could.
I've seen you at weddings.
Yeah, I could dance. See, I can't even, this is why I couldn't do this career.
Not only can you dance, you've led dance groups. You've organized and put it together, taught choreography, and performed it at holiday office parties. You know how to dance.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny you can't say that.
I can't because I've seen real dancers. You know what I mean? Like even now with my knee injury, I'm going to physical therapy. And so they're like, put your leg up and I'll put it by my head. But to me, that's not a real stretch. And they're like, holy shit, you can really bend. And I'm like, no, because I remember the dancers, you know, standing up and like putting their leg by their head. And that's a real stretch. I do like the layman stretch.
They're saying you did an amazing stretch. You're like, no, I didn't.
Right. Yeah.
Doctor.
I'm arguing with them.
Right.
You know, it's ridiculous.
What do you like more, singing or dancing?
Singing is above everything.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you can do it, do you recognize it's the greatest thing a person can do?
It's not.
It is.
No, I recognize it as a sort of thing that unfortunately I can do.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, unfortunately, this is really, really the thing that I was born to do.
Right.
And it's like almost the bane of my existence.
When we started doing Keith and the Girl, that's when you, time-wise, you sing less. Do you miss that?
I always miss singing. I always want to sing, but I don't miss pursuing singing because I was very, very, very bad at it because of the way I speak. Because in auditions, people would be like, well, what makes you so great? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not.
Right.
I'm not. Like, but if you want to hear me sing, I'll sing. And then you can decide if I'm great or not. That's not really what you're supposed to say.
I get you.
Yeah.
What was your first audition?
I did a lot of little, I would audition for anything that would fit, like it would say like 18 to 23. And if I fit that, I would just go. Like, right. If it wasn't like, you know, sometimes they would say like ethnic, I'd be like, yes, you know, right. Like if they say like off white, then I'm like, fantastic. Because I was also nervous that you had to be like Madonna looking, mm-hmm. you know, like very button nose. I'm not very photogenic. I considered myself heavy or fat all the time, even though I wasn't.
You've seen pictures when you used to think that. Looking back, is that ridiculous?
It is ridiculous, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, looking on TV, compared to TV, I wasn't.
Well, you had to be a hanger to be on TV, right?
But the thing is it's so stupid to think about. You don't need right. to think about that. You just go and do your thing.
And how many greats are overweight even? Not that you were, but just to be clear.
And it doesn't matter.
Right.
It really doesn't because it's just go and do your thing. If I could sing, I could sing. So I would go on. I don't remember my first audition because I would
hopefully it said looking for somebody from a broken home. And you're like, oh my God.
So I would go on any audition I could because I had a flexible schedule. I was doing kids parties. And I remember this one audition. I would go on auditions that I would want the result of or not want. It didn't matter. If they okay. wanted me, I was going on the audition because I was rehearsing auditions because it's such a nerve-wracking thing. I was terrible in auditions.
Right.
My first audition was for the Fame School. And unfortunately, I took my next-door neighbor's advice who went to that school and didn't sing a song that I was comfortable with and ready for. I sang a new song, which just made me nervous.
Right. Nobody can sing that Fame song, I'm Gonna Live Forever, right?
That's not gonna show off
kick
your
you
vocals.
Out. Right.
But yeah, this is where I go. I'm like, no, I'm taking you seriously right now. I'm too serious about it. So I auditioned for it. I sang the song. The thing is even if I'm nervous, you can tell I can sing. And I was 12 years old, so you can kind of understand where I'm coming from. But it is the Fame School, so you can't really fuck up. But then they played the piano, and they would go ding, and all I had to go is ah, and I couldn't hear it.
Because your head's just spinning.
I'm spinning. I don't think I belong there. I don't know what to do. I'm too nervous to do the right thing even, so it messed me up. So they'd be like, ding, and I'd be like, like, it's just like, where am I even getting this note from? I don't even know. Like, so it just wasn't happening.
How do they reject you? Thank you?
Yeah, everyone was really nice.
Okay.
You know, they're also really, again, dealing with children.
Right.
So you have to be a little, but these are, you know, the top of New York.
Yeah.
People whose parents have been behind them to do this. Like, yeah. I didn't even know if my parents were going to let me go to the school because it was in Manhattan. And that's where whores go. Everything's where whores
right.
go.
Instead of Queens.
Instead of like right next to them and like,
right.
you know.
Mr. Zim will have me. Fuck you. Right? Who needs him? I can fall back. That's all right.
Yeah. And it's not like I even wanted to pursue music. I just was like, this is a school that I can go to. My zone school was terrible. It had, you know, shootouts and you know, bad reputation. So I had to go to a different school.
Zone school is where you have to based on where you live.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of my first auditions was for, they were looking for someone to go on this tour, quote band. It was, when dance music says band, it's not a band. You know what I mean?
So, it's electronics?
It's electronic music. It was called the Mighty Dubcats.
Okay.
And people who were into electronic music or dance music, they actually know the song. And it's pretty cool because it's like, oh, you were that. But, you know, outside of that, at that little microcosm of like.
What's the song called?
Magic Carpet Ride. And there's not really words. It just goes, ah, ring, ding, ding, ding.
Oh.
Like, it's just weird.
The original Crazy Frog.
Right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. And I would do that. Well, I went to the audition, but by the time I went to the audition, they found someone for that first tour.
Okay.
But the guy liked my voice, so I got my first job recording. And I was recording full songs with him. He was paying me. It was amazing.
All right.
Yeah. And one of the songs got on like KTU. It became like, that's the dance station in New York.
Okay.
And also, I didn't know this, but in Florida, they were singing one of my songs like regularly. If you were into dance music, it was like one of the songs that.
What was that? Do you know?
Where Did Your Love Go?
Where Did Your Love Go? Your mom loves that song, right?
Yeah, Where Is The Love Goes. That's how my mom sings it.
Now, at that point, was she upset? Why are you doing whore behavior? Where did my love go?
I had to wait until I was of age so that they couldn't tell me what to do anymore.
Okay.
Yeah.
But was it causing a riff?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I remember I got this tour. I got the Conjure One tour, which was such a big deal. I was fronting a band. Conjure One, I recorded. I wrote the music to. I got credit.
That's Reese Fulber.
Yeah.
And it'd be a collection of, I'm looking at the album right now, it'd be a collection of different singers, right?
It was a compilation album. So Reese Fulber, just like a little bit of behind the, this is like a big deal because Reese Fulber was one of the two people who produced Delirium, which is a huge series of albums, including the song Silence by, what is her name? The one that does the dog commercials and people cry?
Sarah McLachlan.
Sarah McLachlan, yeah. So they did Silence and it was like, you know, obviously a very popular song.
Right.
And it was really huge in industrial music. So he
Well, I'm looking at, you know, Sinead O'Connor's on the same album, Poe, you know, a whole bunch. It was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a big deal. So I'm on four tracks on that. And I got credit for two because they gave me writing credits,
okay.
Which was such a big deal. And then when it came to tour with that album, they asked me to front it. And I was on a tour bus, getting paid.
So when I say Sinead O'Connor, Poe, Sarah McLachlan, you're doing their songs now too.
Yeah, the Delirium girls were doing Sarah McLachlan's song because that was part of Delirium, but I was part of Conjure One, but we were all touring together because it was the same producers.
Okay.
So I fronted Conjure One. So I did Poe's song and I did Sinead O'Connor's song.
Right.
And I did my songs and, you know, just.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Are your parents starting to get proud of you now?
No. So it was a time where cell phones were like very rarely used, but I did call home one time from the bus. I'm like, this is such a big deal. Like who. Right. Every night we're in a different city and I'm fronting this and everyone's singing along to the music. The place is packed. Big venues like Irving Plaza and like just the Irving Plazas of every city around the country and in Canada was such a big deal.
The Commodore Ballroom.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it was packed. And I got to be on that tour. I called my mother and I was like, Mom, this is crazy. People are coming out. They're buying our merchandise. I'm signing autographs.
I'm in Europe. I'm in North America.
Well, this one was America and the U.S. and Canada.
Okay.
I went to Europe with a different band.
Okay.
And I'm describing this and I'm obviously excited. And it was when cell phones cost me money to call, like right. I'm paying per minute. And she goes, when are you going to be done with all this? Wow. When are you going to get married and have children? Mind you, I'm 23.
Right.
Okay. Or 27. I don't know. Who gives a shit?
Right.
When are you going to get married? I was like, wow, you're straight saying that.
Yeah.
Like, you're just saying that. And I go, I got to go. I just have to go. And then I realized this will never be a good thing for them. And it's really difficult because it's so amazing what's happening to me. So it's hard to feel like I'm crushing my entire family while I'm so happy about this.
Right. Do you tell other bandmates what's going on in your head? Like, oh, my mom and they're artists. And they're like, some people won't get it. Fuck them. Is it that easy or you keep it a secret?
That's not rock and roll. At the time, I was like just trying to be professional and
right.
and like do the right thing. I would even, for that entire tour, I didn't eat any dairy. I didn't have any caffeine because I heard that that affects your vocal cords. And the songs on there took my entire range. I had to go as low as I could and as high as I could. And I had to like, I wanted to take it very seriously. My diet changed. I was quiet in the morning. I didn't, you know, I tried to talk very little and I took it to, it was 30 days of
now
professional
that's rock
people.
And roll.
Yeah.
No dairy, no
right,
talking.
I know.
Regular Guns N' Roses.
But people, you know, like Sarah McLachlan's, guitar player was on tour with us, like her guitar player. He was amazing. People who have been on tour for forever, the bass player went on tour with Pink after my tour.
Right.
You know, like stuff like that. It was just, why can't you understand that this is, I'm amongst people who are really doing this.
Do you think they didn't understand how what a big deal it was?
They did. They thought it was gross. They thought it was disgusting. I'm standing up there in front of people, you know, obviously just not being a good person. And then, but this is what's messed up. When I come to Irving Plaza, you know, New York was one of the stops. And I'm like, wow, like my friends can come and everything. And my mom was like, I'm going to come. And I said, no. I said, no, don't. And my, you know, my aunt and my best friend's mother came and she wasn't allowed to, which I don't know if that's embarrassing for her, but you can't tell me that I'm disgusting. I'm going to think of you while I'm on stage. I won't be able to move properly. And it's not like I was, there was no.
You're not fucking a chair.
No.
Right.
No. I mean, you know, the Mighty Dubcats tour was a little, I was like wearing a short skirt. You could see my underwear when I lifted my leg, but we were doing club dates.
Right.
That was like dance music. But this, you know, I was wearing a crop top, which she would have hated, and she would have said something to me afterwards, like, did you have to wear that or whatever? And I don't want to be thinking about that while I have to hit these notes. I'm in front of my friends now and Irving Plaza.
When you say crop top, there's not under boob or anything like this, you know?
No, but it didn't need to be. It's my belly's showing, you know, there's too much of something showing and I'm not being modest.
Right. Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah, it was painful, but also like, well, I can't go by what you're saying because it's so far and silly that I can't do that.
You were on Dr. Israel's album.
Yeah.
His second one. Comedy Central. You were singing with Jeff Ross doing some rap about having a tiny penis.
He wrote a rap song called He's Got a Little Penis, where the chorus is, he's got a little penis. And he got hired to do it live on Comedy Central. So he's pretty cool because they only hired him and it was a very simple show, but he decided to be a showman about it. He hired dancers to be his backup dancers. He made a whole production of it. He hired Nick Swartzen to be his fake DJ in the background, you know, like rappers doing. He hired me to be his like vocalist so it could look like a real rap show sort of. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
That was Chef from South Park. Was he part of that performance?
Yeah, he and Sandra Bernhardt, because it was what it was. It was
Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, comedy meets music. So Jeff was comedy, but he did music. And Rob Paravonian was a comedic singer. And so it was the show mixed comedy and music. And that's why Sandra Bernhardt was on for the comedy part. And Isaac Hayes was the music part.
And Isaac Hayes, rest in peace, says to you what?
We were backstage and he puts his arm around me and he goes, hey, can I get you breakfast in the morning? I'm like, no way. No fucking way.
Look at that.
Because I'm like, I'm like, no way people really say this. Right. Like, because to me, I was so young. I was like in my early 20s or something. And this man is an old man to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is an old man, like an old man line just happened to me. Right. And it's really, he was serious.
This was before he got religious and started He started regretting South Park.
Oh.
Yeah. So you got him during the fun days, it seems.
That's funny. But I don't know how to react to that. So I just started laughing, which couldn't have been good.
Right. Like, okay. Just walks away.
I didn't know what to say. How can you just say that? Right. What am I supposed to say?
It works, I guess. I guess it works.
I guess because you are Isaac Hayes, for fuck's sake.
Right. Do between auditions and being on tour even, do creeps try to take advantage? Is it people in power sexually? Is it with auditions or, you know, a studio trying to rip you off for money? How many scams did you see?
The stuff that I did that you see, like the Conjure One stuff and the real stuff that actually got put out was fine. But everything else you just sort of had to watch out for, because sometimes auditions were at somebody's house, you know, and it turns out it was a real audition, you know.
Right.
So there was this one. This is really embarrassing. Okay. So, and I was young and I didn't know how to like kind of get out of situations. I was with these two producers, supposedly, who knows, I saw their equipment, but I don't know what's happening. We were talking and, you know, there was an audition. I don't really remember, but we didn't even really start working with each other. And then the one guy was like, oh, I'm going down here. And we were going together, you know, somewhere in Manhattan. I was driving him and he's such an idiot. He was like, oh, that girl's hot, that girl's hot. I'm like, this is so weird. Why? I don't care who's hot. What are you trying to do? Right. It felt very odd. And then he tried to like hook up and I was not into it, but we had pulled over somewhere very desolate, like where there's trucks, but there's nobody in the trucks. You know, right. Those places in Manhattan where it's like industrial things happen during the day and then it kind of shuts down at night and yep. There's no one around. And he just starts jerking off.
Wow.
Yeah. Like in the street, like not even hiding. You know, when you like pee in New York,
right.
You kind of, you know, you go to a corner, you yeah. Do, he's just like, here's
my
dick.
Is he looking at you?
I think he wants me to jerk him off, but I'm just like, can you at least have a vibe? Like, he wasn't right. Bad looking. I was actually somewhat attracted. I wasn't attracted to him because he's such an idiot. He's like, you're pointing out, girl. Like, that's right. Not, I get it. I get that you're a player. You know, you don't, I'm not going to like fall in love with you if we, you know, right. I feel sure. Like he was setting me up to like, and I found that to be very boring and lame. So
what a good skill for a player. You recognize hot women.
Yeah, it's, but I think that's to be like, no one's important to me, you know. And it just, all it did was turn me off and off and off, sure. You know, whereas honestly, if he was just like a regular person, I would maybe right. Be interested. He was, again, he was good looking, like the whole thing, but I just kept being turned more and more off. And then to just take your dick out, like you didn't even try to kiss me or like,
right.
I don't know.
Where does he finish? Does he?
So there's the thing. So he's jerking off and I'm like just standing there, like not knowing what to do. I could, this is my car. He didn't drive me there. I'm in Manhattan. Anyone can go anywhere, but you just kind of, you're so young and you can't really believe it's happening. And
right. Who's driving?
I drove. It was my car.
And so he's like, pull over here?
No, this is like, I don't remember. Right. I don't remember because all I remember is like, wow, this guy's dick is out.
Yeah.
With no vibe, with no anything. And he's like in front of a truck. So he's just jerking off. And this is like the most embarrassing part, but I'm not the one who should be embarrassed. So he's jerking off. So he goes, he knows I'm not going to help him because I don't even know how if I wanted to. Not mechanically, obviously. But then he goes, well, at least grab my balls when I come. I'm like, okay, I guess I can do that. Why do you want me to do that, though? I really was like, I guess. You know what I mean?
It's the least you can do.
Yeah. I just wanted it to be over. I'm like, it's weird to like want to be cool. You know, you it kind of like after they ask you so much, like you just feel like you're this kind of nothing person and just like, I guess if I do this, A, it'll be over.
Right.
And B, like maybe I still am cool. Or something. I don't know. You're not going to be like super mad at me or whatever.
Right.
I knew I didn't want to work with him or that he even had, at that point, I'm like, even if you have an opportunity, I don't even know how to look at you anymore.
Where's,
like as a person.
Where's he finished literally?
Like right where the truck was. Like,
this is all outside?
On the sidewalk facing a truck that was parked outside in the dark. I don't.
I wonder if that's a regular thing for truck drivers. There's like sperm on the side of the truck all the time.
But you know, you find like condoms in Manhattan sure. And like in the city everywhere. I don't know.
Is he embarrassed after at all?
He's like, just fine.
Yeah.
The whole time he's fine. He's fine from start to finish. It was as if we just had like a coffee or something. Like, okay, we're done. Like, I don't know. I get the check.
Right.
I don't even know what happened after. Like, it just was like.
Sure. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I need a shower.
Yeah. You know, it's just, that's the thing. It was like, what did I just do? Like, what did I just do? Like, how did that even make you hot?
Yeah.
Like, why does my reluctant cupping of your balls mean anything to you?
All right. Let's get clean, Henda.
Yeah.
Let's talk Quip.
Yes.
Right. It's time for spring cleaning. Quip's got an easy way to start with brushing habits.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes a day, twice a day can help save the way. It'll change your life.
Actually, I really like this toothbrush, and I got one for me and my boyfriend.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
The new Kids Quip has the same two-minute timer that the adult version does, guiding pulses of the original version with no childish gimmicks. They just brush their teeth like a grown-up.
I have a nephew who's 2 years old. I'm not kidding. He picked up my toothbrush when I was there the last time. I brought my Quip. I have a Quip toothbrush there, too.
Right.
One over there, one over here, because it's so affordable. It's like...
It's like an electric toothbrush, but it's not bulky. You don't keep recharging it.
Yeah.
A simple charge that, you know, they charge and give it to you. But lasts 3 months.
Yeah.
And then they send you a new one.
Yeah, they send you a battery, and you never have to think about it. It's really good. So he happened upon my toothbrush, so I turned it on for him, and he put it in his teeth. My brother walked in, was like, how are you getting him to brush his teeth. Like, why is that toothbrush in his mouth? Right. And I'm like, I don't know. I think he likes the vibration of it and he's like into it.
Yeah.
So then he's now brushing his teeth better.
For an effective clean that's gentle on your sensitive gums, they have their sensitive sonic vibrations. Most people, they brush too hard. It's too abrasive. And the built-in timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you to switch sides, help you clean your whole mouth evenly. 90% of us don't brush for a full 2 minutes, or we don't clean evenly. And it comes with like a cool case.
Yeah.
Where I leave it out for company to see. What do you think of that? That's true.
Yeah, Jerome was over and he's like, oh, this is such a podcast house. You have all the all the Quip equipment.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And you'll love it too. You'll love Quip. That's why over 1 million happy mouths use it. Quip starts at just $25.
That comes with, really, because I just bought it again because mm-hmm. I wanted Xerxes to have his own in my place. And it comes with an entire tube of toothpaste. And the case, the battery's in it already. You don't have to charge it. It's just, you're set up.
An all new head, of course.
Yeah, and it was like $20-$25. It was nothing.
Get quip.com/MOL from my opening line. Get Quip, GETQUIP.com/MOL right now. You can get your first refill pack for free. All right. That's your first refill pack free at GETQUIP.com/MOL.
Of course, MOL is from my opening line.
Now let's talk about Surf Reality.
Yeah.
Okay. This is where we met. I was doing stand up. You were singing.
Mm-hmm.
Is this when you decided, hey, I'm going to put myself out there? Is that the beginning?
That was the most I ever put myself out there because this was a space where like artists, like avant-garde would go, like the serious would go.
Right.
It was every level of art, every kind of art. And I felt like I was such a dork in there. For a while, I just went just to see. And then I thought, well, I can sing. You know, I don't play any instruments, but I could sing a cappella here. But I don't know if they, again, I would second guess myself. Like, I'm probably boring to them.
Right. They could be nerdy, but they're still the cool kids of this.
They are the cool kids. And the avant-gardeness, you know, I was singing like Aretha Franklin and like kind of pop R&B.
Right.
And I was like, they're not interested.
They'll think that's selling out.
Yeah, like yeah. That. Like if you hear it on the radio, it's boring or something. That's just, it's all in my head.
To them, Ramones barely makes the cut.
Right, exactly. Okay. I mean, you know, Faceboy, the host, his brother was...
Detachable Penis.
Yeah, yeah.
Detachable Penis.
Yeah. It was just like one of the coolest songs ever.
Right.
And it represented the place very, very well.
Right.
And I thought they were so cool and so talented. So the first time I went on stage there, I was still doing kids' parties, and I wanted to be a little more avant-garde and a little more like, you know, I'm going to sing a basic song, but I'm gonna get you guys a little bit. So I borrowed a costume from the kids' party place that I worked at. I was playing Pocahontas that summer, like all the time. And it was a Pocahontas dress, and I had the armband, and I learned a little bit of sign language. I picked it up from one of the jobs that I did for the chorus of the song. Mm-hmm. So I taught them a little bit of the sign language.
And you were allowed to because we didn't discover appropriating for
this. Yeah. I just wanted to be like, you know, this is you also. You guys are with me. And so I taught them that. And that was also kooky.
Right.
And then I sang and they were so welcoming. And that was the first place that after I wrote a song, I did it there. And I could feel my voice shaking a little bit because it's so vulnerable because I'm like, oh, I wrote these lyrics. Right. They come from me.
Ugh. What was the title?
I hate to say it, but Dreadlock. It was like otherwise known as Thank You.
Okay.
It was, I was dating a Rastafarian and it was the first time that I saw a little lighter on, once I learned a little bit more about Rastafarian, I knew it was the same kind of sexism that I grew up with. And like, you know, religion was like a really big thorn in me, but it was the first time I had met a
pun, big thorn in you, crown of thorns.
Oh,
come on now.
Yes, sir.
All right.
It was the first time that I felt like I met a dude who was masculine, but still gentle and sweet and like, ran that because I always thought like you're a pussy if you're just like if you say like kind things and sweet things, and it was very, very cool. But we broke up and then I wrote that song. And it was about how like I don't know. I can't. I want to sing it, but then it's so weird. So we can move on.
I'll sing
but
it.
But I did it. You'll sing it?
No. Okay. I don't know it.
So I did that. I also wrote like a slower song, and I started writing and bringing it into this space, and they were so, I was so wrong about them, you know, and that's what's great about the avant-garde. Like, they know what it feels like to be dismissed for something stupid. So they weren't dismissing me. They were like, oh, this is talent. It's fine. I started writing songs on the fly in that room. Like, there was times where I just went on stage and I didn't have anything rehearsed, and Faceboy would just change the lighting and I would just sing.
Should exes get credit on breakup songs?
Oh, I'm changed. I changed the name of that song. No.
Okay.
No. Because in hindsight.
You don't think Adele owes anybody a car?
Oh, I owe everybody a car, but but no. But then if I owe you a car, then you owe me a piece of my life that you took.
All right, that's fair.
Yeah.
What's the first time you were on a stage?
So it's hard to say, but in high school in sophomore year, I joined something called Sing, which was an after school thing that was produced, directed, and written and performed by the kids. And you just had like teachers, you know, babysitting you, but you did everything. And I didn't realize this, but it was the cool kids who were running it, and they totally didn't rehearse with me. Oh. And I had no idea what I was doing, so I don't know what made me go on that stage, because I didn't know the song.
Okay.
And so the band played, and I was like just standing there like, remember that we didn't study this?
And then for 3-4 minutes you're just standing yep. there?
And you see...
Is your family in the audience?
No. No. Okay. But because I went to school with it, I didn't care. I don't know why I didn't care. I was just
Are people thinking it's funny? Like, you having an attitude, obviously.
No, I don't know why everyone was nice to me. Nobody mentioned it afterwards. I never said this in public, but I didn't join. I joined.
Are you giving out a look like, hey, this isn't my fault?
Yeah. And the guitar player's like, and this is when this, he's like trying to tell me. And I'm like, no, it's not. I don't know where I am, right, like in the song, and I need to pick it up. It's that I don't know any of this.
And then there was the show must go on, so she came out.
I don't know why I came out. I could have been like, hey, this is not happening. Right. The next year I joined again, but for dance. And that was fun.
Okay.
Because you have to go to rehearsal for dance.
Right. So all this material.
Yes.
And the tours that we mentioned.
Yes.
I mean, you're on Much Music. That's in Canada. That's their MTV, right?
Yes.
You've been on Mexico television, you know, in all the countries we've mentioned. Do you miss it?
I don't know what to say about that, except I'm learning guitar now and I'm starting to write again. And I don't miss working as a singer, but I do miss performing and singing and writing. And I, what I want to do before I die is write an album. And this sounds so corny, but I want to write an album for me that I put out, that I don't have to worry about how many of this I will sell. It'll just kind of be there and I'll feel accomplished and I'll have the music that I wrote. So
that's not corny. I think that's called being an artist.
Yeah, but you know, I don't care how many I sell, but I'm sure I will care.
Right.
But I've never felt that way. Like, I really want to do this so that because it feels so good to write a song and it feels so good to go and do it and to have it, that I don't want to care about anything past that. I want to just get that done. And I think I will. It'll take me probably years.
A weekend, huh?
Because I, you know, it's so big to me that I can't do it. You know what I mean? It's so, sure, like, music is so big that I can't pursue it, because as soon as they ask me why pick me, I'm like, don't, you know, right. As soon as they say how much, I'm like, I can't care about that. And it sounds like the pretentious artist, like you can't possibly be serious, but it corrodes it for me and makes me want to cry. It makes it weird that I have to negotiate how much you're going to pay me and like what it's going to mean and who's going to follow me and who's going to show up. I don't want that in my music. I am willing to be an artist in other ways and do that, but not that.
Well, we're going to make sure the type of album you're talking about is going to happen. I'm looking at the album that you did, the Christmas album, speaking of being Jewish.
Right. See, that. So that's my outlet. I'm just like, well, I'll get to sing.
Right.
And, you know, I'll get to record. I'll get to be in the studio. Like, all that stuff is so fun. And it'll just be the thing that, you know, Christmas music. Like, people listen to Christmas music. Right. I'm not putting anybody out. You know, I'm just doing this classic thing.
You had a 5-pound tumor removed. It busted your diaphragm.
Yeah, I have a frozen diaphragm.
How scared were you that you wouldn't be able to sing again?
Again, to me, it sounds so stupid. Like, I'm not pursuing singing, so who cares if I could sing or not? I'm
really
only singing in the shower, but it meant a lot to me. I was like, please let me have this, because when I sing, even like by myself, I really like it.
Right.
You know? So I don't want to be able to not be able to breathe enough to not do that. And that's what I was working towards after the open heart surgery. I just was like, let me try this one song where I know it'll take, it was hard for me to do before the tumor. I wonder if I can do it after. And when I could, it was like a miracle, but I don't believe in miracles. But it was, you know, it was like, oh my God, I can do this.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's either amazing or just dumb advice or something stupid a doctor said. You know what I mean?
Well,
I won't be able to sing. I won't. No. Oh, you can. I don't know anything.
They weren't concerned about my singing.
No, it wasn't their primary.
No, but they did say I have only been breathing with like one lung essentially is what they said. So I will continue to breathe like with one lung, but I'm still biking. I'm still doing everything and I'm still able to hold the notes, whether they're high or low. Which
of course
is so
you can.
Good.
Yeah. In fact, we challenged Henda once on Keith and the Girl soon after the busted diaphragm and said, all right, let's see. And that'll make you cry. That'll make us, the audience, cry. So you still got it. I don't know if you're able to sing in stereo with only one lung, but it's exciting, right? I'm going to leave here with a song, by the way, Damascus. I think that shows a nice amount of range. That's from Conjure One. But let me mention this also. ESPN, you were on singing. I'm looking right here. FIFA. Mm-hmm. The EA Sports Soccer video game you're on.
I got paid for that. You know, I still get residuals. They're at this point, they're like, you know, $50 or whatever. Oh, Conjure One a couple years ago came out with a vinyl release. So all of a sudden I got like, I don't know, a few $100 out of nowhere. And it just, even when the check is $25, I'm like, it's my singing check.
Of course. Of course. Do you sing when you cash it? Do you sing to the clerk at the bank?
No, I got to be modest. No one wants to hear me sing.
Well, there you go. It's my opening line. Thank you, Henda.
Thank you.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.